Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, you have appreciated the performing arts in the past, correct?
Of course, a true patron.
Right. Well, what's the most annoying behavior you have witnessed while watching a live performance of like a play or a ballet or an opera?
Erin, anyone who makes noise or wrestles a plastic wrapper situation, like unwrap that shit before you sit down. Anything that distracts me from the show is obnoxious.
Okay. I once was at a performance of The Nutcracker in New York City, and the kid behind me, wearing like khakis and a blue blazer, so like prep school looking guy, fell asleep in the first act, and I could hear him snoring the entire time. But did he get kicked out? No.
Probably not.
He didn't get kicked out. Out of all of the obnoxious behavior I've seen at plays, musicals, operas, ballets, whatever, never seen anybody get kicked out. But you know who did get kicked out?
One of our faves.
Lauren Boebert. Lauren Boebert, who was for some reason at a musical on Sunday night in Denver when Congress was back in session. I don't know why she was there. I don't know why she was dressed like she was going clubbing in Miami on New Year's Eve for a Sunday night performance of the Beetlejuice musical. And she must have been incredibly annoying to get kicked out of a musical based on a movie about a supernatural pervert.
I mean, Erin, talking, vaping, etc. What else could she have been doing to be more obnoxious in that theater?
I don't know. I guess she was singing along. Don't sing along at the musicals.
I mean, okay. People, if the crowd is into it, if they're singing along, like I saw the show Six on Broadway, everyone sings along at the end. That's part of the shtick. I have a sense that when you mix vaping and singing, things get a little bit out of control.
Mm-hmm. And there are also, you know what, if that's what you want to do, you want to get rowdy at a play, there are plays that are specifically written for rowdiness.
Yeah, like, go see Rocky Horror.
Yeah, I went and saw The Great Comet, R.I.P., before it closed in New York City. And it was a rowdy-ass play. But it's not, look, Beetlejuice, show some respect. Show some respect to Beetlejuice. All right, we've got a super fun show for you guys this week. We really run the gamut. We talk about everything from what the federal government isn't doing to support parents and children, to what Kevin McCarthy thinks he's doing, to what Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis were thinking when they did what they did. We're going to talk about all of it, and then we're going to get to a truly epic Sanity Corner / I Feel Petty. It's a really fun episode, fun week. Stick around. Hey, you're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that's already brainstorming what they want to be for Halloween. I've been brainstorming for months, to be frank.
I like to brainstorm for my niece.
What has the storm produced?
The storm has produced, she was Pebbles Flintstone 1 year.
Oh, that's cute.
She was an adorable elephant, and I think last year she was a veterinarian.
Oh, that's cute.
Mm-hmm.
That's cute. We're doing family costumes. Last year, we were the bad guys from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
You were so good last year.
Thank you. We have to, but, you know, that's a lot of pressure. And I think this year, Juniper is obsessed with this one song by Cyndi Lauper. She likes every Cyndi Lauper song, but there's one song that she calls the Yeah, 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 Yeah song. Anyway, she really loves it, and I think we're going to dress her as Cyndi Lauper for
Halloween. Okay, that is unbelievable. What her hair is doing right now is so perfect for Girls Just Want to Have Fun era Cyndi Lauper.
Totally, totally. I'm excited to give her like a puffy. My mom's going to make her costume like she does for all her grandkids every year. Like puffy skirt.
You know, yes.
Lots of jewels. She's going to, hopefully Juniper likes it and doesn't just throw the jewels aside like an angry god, but we'll see.
Erin, I might have to send you guys some Cyndi Lauper appropriate tights or leggings.
Oh, wow. That would be a great touch. You know what's, Sudafed doesn't work?
Erin, how I have been devastated all summer that my body has failed me because I am dying from allergies. And I feel so much less insane now because I'm like, oh, all the Sudafed and Advil congestion I've been taking just doesn't work.
It doesn't work. It clinically,
I'm not broken.
It does clinically doesn't work. That is so funny. And what's funny to me is I think they've known since like 2008. There have been scientists that are like, guys, this shit does not work.
It is like the biggest gaslight of all time.
Oh, you know, on one hand, absolutely. But on the other hand, it's sort of, I bet a lot of sufferers of allergies and congestion now feel like how women who suffer from endometriosis felt, like when their doctor figured, it's like, oh, I've heard of this disease. Yeah, it's.
And you know what the worst is? If you look in my fucking medicine cabinet, I have like 30 different brands of everything, and it can apparently all go in the garbage. I'm like, well, Sudafed congestion doesn't work. Maybe Advil will work. Maybe Mucinex will work. Guess what? Have a lot more room for blush I don't wear now in my medicine cabinet.
Speaking of things that don't work, the Republicans in the House of Representatives are launching a impeachment inquiry into President Biden. Alyssa, what's
Erin,
your reaction?
Exhausting. Look, we have joked for a year about Kevin. He wakes up every day and just wants to survive that day. And a week ago or 2 weeks, whenever it was, we were like, oh, yeah, he's trading like impeachment. Like, oh, dear Matt Gaetz, if you will vote to keep the government open, I'll move to impeach Biden. Do we have a deal? And Matt Gaetz, human frat paddle, as Tommy Vitor called him, is like, yeah, dude, we have a deal. The minute Kevin McCarthy announced the impeachment inquiry, Matt Gaetz was like, psych! Just kidding.
Oh, my God. Matt Gaetz looks like Frankenstein got a tanning bed.
He is the absolute worst. And also, can I just say, Republicans allegedly are so obsessed with spending money in the government. This is like the greatest fucking waste of taxpayer money that you could possibly imagine.
Oh my God. They just love, if we're not funneling money to wealthy people and defense contractors, we're wasting time. Speaking of wasting time, I want to play an audio clip.
Oh, yes.
And I know, Alyssa, in advance that you have declared yourself the least horny person alive.
Yeah.
I feel like this clip will bring your
dethroned.
Levels down.
I've been dethroned.
Okay, let's listen to, this is a senator, this is a U.S. senator reading from a graphic novel memoir that is, that he wants to ban from schools. So let's play the clip. Apologies in advance.
It's called Genderqueer. Okay. Let me read an excerpt from that. Quote, I got a new strap-on harness today. I can't wait to put it on you. It will fit my favorite dildo perfectly. You're going to look so hot. I can't wait to have your cock in my mouth. I'm going to give you the blowjob of your life, then I want you inside of me. End quote.
Ugh. Make it stop. That was unnecessary.
Look, you know, abstinence-only education does not work. I think what might work to get, I mean, the teens are already not fucking. That's statistically true. But the teens will absolutely not be fucking if every Friday before they go home, they have to listen to a recording of this at school. It's played over the loudspeaker.
You know, like listening to him is terrible, but having watched the clip with my own eyes was even worse.
Okay. So also Fox News characterized it as like Democrats squirm as Republican reads explicit. It's like, we're not squirming. They're trying not to laugh their fucking faces off because how, like that's, it's really a Rorschach test in where you
100%.
Fall. It's like, no, it's squirming because like this man is like disgusting. Like this is a disgusting person.
He's gross.
With disgusting views who is, it's so funny. Like, I guess I don't really spend very much time around people that have views that are so old-timey, you could sell them in like an antique store. Like that, you gotta put them in a little plastic case because these views—they're not making them anymore. You know, I don't really encounter people like that organically in my life. And so when I see members of the Senate that are like such fucking babies about a book that addresses queer sexuality, that is. You know what? It's high school appropriate, according to the author Maya Kobabe. It was written about the experiences of Kobabe as a young genderqueer person, right. And like it's just when I was in high school, I was reading Cosmo. You know,
Jane. I was reading Jane.
I was reading of them.
Can I tell you the part of this that actually just made me sit back and have a moment?
Uh huh.
Okay, you know Senator Kennedy did not find that on his own.
Oh, yeah.
So I am picturing the meeting where his staff pitched him this stunt for a Senate hearing. It is beyond anything I think has taken place. I mean, I'd like to think it's beyond anything that's taken place in the United States Senate, but we both know it's probably not true.
Yeah. Also, like, there's so much grosser stuff in the Bible. Like,
yes.
Like the book, the book of Genesis, chapter 19, is about Lot being drugged and raped by his daughters so that they could carry on the family line. And then God kills like thousands. It's like the Bible is gross.
So
it's
gross.
It's so much grosser than what John Kennedy read. And like, look. Maybe we should be banning the Bible. I think that would maybe do some people some good.
If you're going to – it's tit for tat, man. If you're going to ban one, you got to ban the other.
You got to ban them. Like, let's just apply evenness to this. Mm-hmm. Like, because Jesus Christ. Also, that is so fucking gross, man. Like, I don't – the reason I find it gross is, like, that man, I don't think he could find the clitoris with the aid of an app. You know,
no.
Like, I don't think he's, I think that in that he was raised to believe, I don't believe that he has ever given somebody a pleasurable sexual experience in his life. And I can say that and it's mean, but I think it's probably true. It's probably true of most men of that
age. I'm not sure he would disagree with you.
Yeah. I mean, but we're not supposed to like it is the thing.
No,
it's
right.
Like, we're not supposed to like it. And so I don't really think that this person should be the one that is the arbiter of like what materials people can read. If it were up to him, we would just be watching Lawrence Welk just over and over.
How old-timey of you.
Lawrence Welk and Yellowstone with, like, the sexy bits cut out of Yellowstone. And the Duggars before we knew. But we have to pretend we don't know
about
them.
But now we know.
Yeah.
Now we know. Because our favorite Duggars have outed the whole family. And guess what? Turns out a family that protects a predator aren't necessarily good.
It's almost as though religion does not inoculate you from being a fucking predatory monster.
Yeah,
it's almost as though they're found everywhere in all facets of society, and it's, God, fucking exhausting. There should be fewer states. A lot of these senators, I'm just like, the bar is very low to be like a senator from, anyway, we can get into that at a different time. All right. You're on notice, Senator Kennedy, because that was gross. Alyssa, we've got some labor news.
Yes, Aaron. We're recording on Wednesday. Right now, the United Auto Workers Union is poised to potentially go on strike. Their contracts expire end of the day on Thursday. Detroit's big three automakers, GM, Ford, and Stellantis, which is the holding company for Chrysler, have not reached a compromise yet with the UAW. Now, a reason I think it's really important to flag this, there's so much union news in the news. Back during the financial crisis, UAW gave up benefits to keep plants afloat, and they have never been made whole. So, as of our recording, news reports say that the UAW may target strikes. This is what I love. This is smart. This is strategic. Okay. So news reports are saying UAW may target strikes at a small number of factories run by each of Detroit's three automakers that manufacture components for big pickup trucks and SUVs, which are the company's main profit centers. Now, why this is smart? UAW has a membership of about 146,000, and they pay their workers when they strike. So every striking worker gets $500 a week. Now, if all 146,000 workers went on strike at $500 a week, the UAW strike fund would be depleted pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So this is a pretty good plan, I think, if they don't reach an agreement. For anyone who doesn't know, the UAW is seeking a 40% wage increase over the term of the four-year contract, a 32-hour work week with 40 hours of pay, the restoration of their 401k-style retirement plans, and a return of cost of living pay increases, among other things. So, Aaron, we'll see what happens, but it seems like the UAW has a plan. They will not be caught flat-footed and, you know, hope the big three come back with a more generous proposal.
Oh, man. Well, you know, also an upside to this could be fewer big fucking trucks on the road. Those things are dangerous and they shouldn't exist and nobody needs them.
So dangerous. And, you know, also not for nothing, but from museum workers in Chicago to police officers in Los Angeles, American Airlines pilots, college professors in New Jersey, and Oakland, California hospital workers, they've all seen pay increases. UPS drivers in August approved a five-year contract that brings their average annual pay to $170,000. So when people stick together, they see positive outcomes.
Yeah, and SAG and the WGA still on strike.
Yep, still on strike.
And last week, we got an email from our WGA. I'm in the WGA. We got an email, and I'm sure it's been public at this point, that was just like, here's what's up with the strikes. We know that individual studios are willing to talk, so maybe they'll talk. So it'd be cool if the AMPTP broke up. I don't think that they're really a good organization.
And it's interesting because they have said the same of the big three automakers. There was some discussion that maybe Ford would broker a deal, but doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, it would give them a competitive advantage. And those are their main competitors that they're supposed to be negotiating with. So I'm just going to say, fuck them over. Be a rat.
Be tough.
Warner Brothers, Ford, do it. Fuck them over. So, Alyssa, on this show, we talk about silly shit that does not impact very many people's lives, like Lauren Boebert being kicked out of Beetlejuice, which is just funny. It's funny. We're bringing joy because it's a funny story. It's unfortunate to the members or the people who live in Colorado's 3rd District who have a clown of a representative, like a true clown. But for the rest of us, it's like, you know, it's fun.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of things that we cover that directly impact a lot of people's lives that aren't just sort of the dog and pony show or goat rodeo of D.C. this is a bummer. America's official seal is like – it's like an eagle holding like some – like, right? Some like – what
branches?
Are – arrows? Arrows and branches,
oh, arrows.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. I think the eagle should be giving a double middle finger and underneath it should say, fuck them kids, because that's pretty much – that pretty much sums up our approach in general to supporting families and supporting children. Two stories that just came out this week are really bleak examples of how little the federal government is doing, thanks to Republican blockage, how little they're doing to actually help families. Federal child care funding from the pandemic is running out. And as a result, the money's being used up. As a result, one in three child care centers could close. One in three child care centers across the country could close because they are out of pandemic funds. That impacts 3.2 million children. Now, the country, as listeners who have ever tried to put a kid in daycare knows, this country is already short 3.6 million child care slots. The kids are not going to take care of themselves. They can hurt themselves pretty bad. Most kids under a certain age spend most of their waking hours brainstorming ways to hurt themselves. We need people to watch kids. And if there aren't childcare slots available, somebody's got to watch them. It's going to be an extended family member, somebody who's elderly.
Right.
It's going to be somebody who leaves the workforce or drastically cuts back their workforce participation, not by choice, but by necessity. Like if you want to stay home with your kids, good for you. Do it. But if you have to, because you can't find a daycare to send them to, like, that sucks.
Democrats tried to increase the emergency childcare funding, but Republicans have not let the policies pass. President Biden has reprimanded them for it publicly. It's a bummer. And also, the other news story that I wanted to talk about, child poverty has doubled since last year. Doubled. And that is because Republicans and Joe Manchin failed to extend the enhanced child tax credit from the pandemic times. So, Alyssa, what do you make of these stories?
Aaron, both parts of both of these articles and studies are like very depressing. But you know what's just so interesting, I guess, is that these all run parallel to what the GOP is trying to do to reproductive rights. They're like, oh, you can't hurt the children, all the unborn children. And again, what are they doing for the born children?
Nothing.
Like, this is, I mean, and Aaron, all of this shit is just backed up by science. Like, the child tax credit, Aaron, over the 2 years, they saw declines, significant declines in child poverty. Guess what? Cause effect, all right? You did something to help the kids. You lifted millions out of poverty. And now they're like, you know what? We saw what good the money could do, and fuck you.
And here's the thing, like Representative Rosa DeLauro, who's been working on this for her entire career and we've had on the show a couple times, mentioned that there has been research into what people do with money if you give them a child tax credit and they spend it on their kids. They spend it on their kids. Like Joe Manchin suggesting a work requirement for this is like one of the most disgusting things I've seen an alleged Democrat do in Washington. And they have done some disgusting things in D.C. And here's the other thing. So not only does it harm children, because, you know, children need adequate supervision. You know, I had a woman I know was, like, struggling to find childcare, so she sent her son to this kind of, like, unlicensed bootleg daycare. And one day she came to pick him up early, and she saw that he was just strapped into a bouncer and sitting, like, 2 feet from a TV. He was, he was, like, 8 months old. And that's all they had been doing is just, like, strapping him down and putting him in front of the TV. It's just – another thing here is that it's very important for women to participate in the workforce for the economic – overall economic health of the country. Right now – female labor participation is 77%, which is near an all-time high. Take away childcare for 3.6 million children, that is that's not sustainable. That's going to go down. So it's not like, you know, when our tax dollars, quote unquote, go to fund pay for childcare workers who are already criminally underpaid.
Right.
When tax dollars go to fund them, it's not like it's just families benefiting. The entire economy benefits from actually taking care of children. And I also, you know, even people who don't have kids and are like, why do I have to pay for your kids, blah, 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 blah. It's like, okay, look, you chose not to have kids, and that is a perfectly respectable decision. I do not argue with anybody who don't want to have kids. Definitely don't do it if you don't want to. But complaining about supporting people who have children is really stupid to me, because one day, you know, when you if you don't have kids, one day you're going to get old and somebody's kids are going to be keeping the infrastructure afloat, are going to be keeping the country going, are probably going to be providing direct care to you. Like, there are somebody's kids.
And Aaron, here's the thing. That argument as a child-free adult is fucking bullshit. We all pay taxes. That money goes to stuff that some of us will never partake in, right? Guess what? New York pays more into the federal economy than Kentucky does. I don't withhold my tax dollars because I don't want to help Mitch McConnell's people. Like, it is an absolute garbage, bullshit argument. And you know what? I want to give my money because, you know what? I want to make sure that I get to work with people like you, Aaron, and that you and I can be together without problem. And, like, it is people who make that argument. It's like people who don't want to pay school taxes because they don't have kids in the school anymore. Fuck you.
Yeah, no, a hearty fuck you. I also want to, like, say finding a daycare, finding childcare is a nightmare. Like, before I had kids, I had, like, heard friends with kids kind of, like, allude to how bad it was. But here's how bad it was here in Los Angeles. When I was about 6 months pregnant, I started calling around to different daycare centers just because I wasn't sure if I wanted to, you know, send my kid to daycare or not. Started calling around.
The closest two daycares to me, the wait list was at least a year. At least a year. So, like, if I was one of those women who had to go back to work and there was no possibility of, like, I had to have my child in care at the end of a 12-week, you know, FMLA guaranteed non-paid leave that we have in this country, pathetic. If I had to put my baby in daycare at 3 months, I would have been, like, SOL. Like, SOL. And like, there are some daycare centers that had like 18-month waiting periods. So you would have had to get yourself on the list before you were even pregnant. It's absolutely crazy. Right now we're applying for preschool. She is not 2 years old yet, and we are applying for preschool that starts next fall. It's like, I don't mind applying, but like feeling like it's a competitive process is there should be enough slots for every kid, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really ridiculous. And yeah, thanks a lot, Republicans, because yeah, you're super pro-life, super pro-family.
So pro-life.
Put the kids in poverty and make it so the moms can't work because they have to stay home and watch them.
America.
America. Fuck yeah. And then one more quick story before we take a break and get into personal political with our panel. We'd like to talk about states. States are important. States are where the action is. Something is going down in Virginia this fall that everybody should be paying attention to. Alyssa, can you kind of tee us up?
Aaron, Virginia is a complicated place. It has a Democratic majority Senate and a GOP majority House, which obviously makes it difficult to pass policies. In the upcoming election in November, the entire state legislature is up for election, and the results will determine whether or not a 15-week abortion ban loved by Republican Virginia Governor Youngkin will pass through. The South relies on Virginia as an option for reproductive health care, so this would impact Virginians and America as a whole. Aaron, we are less than 8 weeks until Election Day in Virginia, and early voting starts in less than 2 weeks on the 22nd. Early voting is crucial for Democrats out there, so get out and vote. Go to votesaveamerica.com/Virginia for more information.
All right. Yeah, Virginia. Man, the Youngkin even being governor is a testament to how you shouldn't fuck with parents in general. Because he basically won because he wanted to reopen schools during COVID. And parents were frustrated because they had nowhere to put their kids. So, yeah, but he sucks. He sucks.
Sucks.
He sucks. Okay, let's take a quick break. When we come back, personal political with our panel. And welcome back. You are listening to Hysteria, the podcast that's dying to know what happened from an on-the-ground source at Burning Man. And that brings us to our first panelist, Michaela Watkins. Who was at Burning Man? Why?
80,000 people were at Burning Man. Yes. Why is can only be answered individually by each person. I can tell you why I went, which was our friend Reed designed the temple, which is this sort of beautiful space there that is kind of very different from the rest of Burning Man because it's very quiet. It's very sacred-y space. It's where people go and like kind of barf and dump out all their mourning and grief, and it's really something. Like to go there. Listen, will I go to Burning Man again? I don't know. Maybe I went 9 years ago and swore I'd never go back. My husband got it a hair up his ass to go this year. I hate that expression.
I've never heard it.
Oh, Michaela, yeah, it's awful.
Self-created.
It's disgusting. I'll never say it again.
A bee in his bonnet.
A bee in his bonnet to go because, you know, he's like, this is a once in three lifetimes thing that we know somebody who's making this. Like, and then they basically in effigy torch it on the last night. But there are just people very, you know, expressing and mourning in there, and it's just like the most gorgeous thing you ever saw. And I wish every town had I guess people are like, well, that is a temple, but but I just mean, like that because of one of their tenets is radical inclusion, right? So that means anybody can, you know, express themselves any way they want. So people are just like very publicly grieving in there. And it could be anything from, oh my God, so many pictures of, you know, dead moms and sadly children too, but or friends. But then there's like wedding dresses in there that just say fraud across it. Somebody's like going to torch it that night. And, you know, it's the last thing to burn there. So, okay. So was there a weather event? Yes. It rained. It rained. And then I started getting, I didn't really have cell service, but I got these texts from people saying, are you okay? Are you okay? And I said to my husband, I think something really bad happened. I didn't realize we were the headline. I didn't realize Burning Man was a headline. It just rained. They said, this is such a metaphor for life, right? They said, don't drive so that the playa can heal itself. It'll harden. Just don't drive on it. That's all we ask. It's Saturday. Most people go home Sunday or Monday. Don't drive on it. Humans are like, don't drive on it means I personally need to get the fuck out of here. So people started to drive on it, and they got stuck, and that's where the clusterfuck started to happen. But yeah, I said fuck twice.
Libertarian paradise. Libertarian paradise.
Libertarian paradise, exactly.
And then rounding out our panel, she has some comedy tour dates coming up in the Midwest. Chicago on September 22nd and 23rd. Columbus, Ohio on September 26th. Cincinnati on September 27th. Cincinnati's basically Kentucky, right?
It's actually going to be in Liberty, which is Kentucky, but I go, I can't get into the weeds on what is Kentucky and what is Ohio.
Right. I feel like that's a very regional conversation. Yes. And Indianapolis on September 29th, Megan Gailey, welcome back.
Hello. The Midwest will be my Burning Man.
And then, you know, at the end, you just
I'll torch something. I'll torch my parents' home. No, I won't. Lovely.
Honestly, both of these things sound like A24 films.
That is so funny. That is so funny.
Okay. We are going to get into a news story this week that has kind of like, it's like seeped into everything, I think. It's become like the center of like online feminist discourse, and it's become the center of like, you know, there's people who are very like, ah, Scientology people, it's Scientology discourse. It's becoming a lot. So, and that's the story of Danny Masterson receiving a 30-year sentence for his rape case, despite the fact that all of his That 70s Show castmates, with the exception of Topher Grace. Yes, Topher Grace, who is cool, apparently, wrote letters urging leniency from the judge. Alyssa, what did you make of the 30-year sentence for Masterson and then the ensuing revelations about his associations with the people who tried to support him?
I mean, here's the thing. First of all, seems like he did some bad shit, and he's paying a price for it. He has been punished. This is great. Okay. Now, the letter. This is a problem. If someone told me before a trial that you, Aaron, murdered somebody.
Oh, it depends on who.
This is what I'm saying.
What if they deserved it?
This is my thing. They had a very special relationship with him that they thought superseded. Like them understanding what he did also indicts in a way their own judgment, right? This is a person that they consider to be a good and trustworthy person. So my point is, I can understand if before the trial they were like, I don't know, he's a good guy. But then like when everything comes out and like the jury's like, yeah, no, he's fucking bad. I feel like you really got to pick your battles, and they did not pick the correct battle.
Michaela, what did you make of the whole thing?
Okay. I mean, from everything I've sort of read about it, it seems like, you know, there was this accusation that this is really was only happened because it was, you know, an assault on Scientology, you know, on their reputation. And I was like, you know, nobody had to make up a rape case to, you know, go after Scientology's reputation. That was already pretty much that will was already cast. Am I making up? Am I just making up expressions today?
No,
that
no.
That wool was already
the die. The die. The die. Okay. Thank you. The die was already cast. Yes. Hi. I'm going to see a neurologist after this. But anyway, here's the thing. I'm gonna both sides of this and end up somewhere. So you have to listen to the whole thing. Nobody's mm-hmm. allowed to just like cut out a little snippet of what I'm about to say because the first part is gonna bother everybody. When you are the age that they were getting on a hit TV show and they were a family, they were probably a cult of personalities in there. They were probably bonded in a way that. Imagine theater camp on steroids where everybody's not just hanging out with each other 24/7, but they're getting extremely famous and rich together. And they probably feel like they were in some kind of trench together and that their formative years were together. And so I often think when I see somebody, you know, stepping up for somebody who's on the stand, like, what if I woke up tomorrow and somebody accused my dearest loved ones of a crime? And what do you do in that moment that doesn't completely sell out your friend immediately due to an accusation? What the issue here is that there is nothing to suggest that these accusations were wrong or that these Right. people were lying. And the irony that they said, well— in their letters that he was keeping them off drugs at a time where they were so vulnerable. And the fact that, you know, the case was about him because he was saving them up for his, you know, victims is just, it's abhorrent. It's unconscionable that they would not be able to step outside of themselves at that moment and go, okay, now this is our psychology. This is our evolution that we have to get over. That, mm-hmm. yeah, we were in this, you know, band of brothers maybe. I'm projecting this. I don't even know if this is true, but this is the only reason I could ever see that that bond does get really strong, mm-hmm. especially given their age. And that, but I don't excuse it in any way, shape, or form because now they have to say, who am I defending, and what does that say about me? And mm-hmm. and the fact that they did it, it's confounding, especially mm-hmm. given their sex trafficking well, organization. Take it away, Megan.
I really do agree with you, Michaela, and I actually think that's a very valuable perspective as someone who is a successful working actress to go, it's, you know, you end up being family with people and it goes beyond sort of like job. I think their apology, if it can be called that, was so much worse.
Yes, totally.
I think if you're going to say anything, you come out and go, listen, his mom called. Yeah. And it was, you can't say no to a mom or like what, but it's like, you cannot defend this. And then the human trafficking of it all is really, I think, what is something we can learn from to go, okay, now let's actually take a step back outside of Ashton and Mila. Iggy Azalea also wrote a letter in support of Tory Lanez, who was found guilty of shooting Megan Thee Stallion. So this does happen.
Oh, God.
And it happens, I'm sure, on a non-famous scale all the time.
So does that make Ashton Kutcher the Iggy Azalea of that
yes.
70s show?
Yes, okay. Yes. Okay. So you take a step back, and I've seen really thoughtful analysis of this, of going, these are two people that have, you know, dedicated time and resources and a lot of their life's work to fighting human trafficking. And you want to go, hey, babe, the call's coming from in the house. Like, why don't you set up a foundation to attack sexual assault within organized religion, because that is what's actually, like, it's a lot easier to point outside of us and go, there's a boogeyman and he's coming to get all of our daughters. When it's like, actually, it's coaches, it's religious leaders, it's neighbors, it's family. Mm. That is much more prevalent. And so, yes, your work is valuable. And yes, that is a real thing. And I think it's amazing that airline workers are being trained on it and people that are coming in contact with actual victims of trafficking, because that is, it is real. I do think it's conflated, though. Mm-hmm. And what is actually happening, what we really need boots on the ground for, is shit like this. And it's like that your work does not make it so that you're allowed to defend this other person.
Mm-hmm. And you know, can I say one thing to sort of clarify what I was trying to say in the beginning, but both Megan and Michaela have helped me. I could see being a character witness during a trial much more than I could see sending this letter of support after 100%. The verdict had come out.
Yeah.
That was totally. Kind of my point. Before you have heard everything, you go into the trial and you're like, here's my personal experience with this person. That's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What the letters after the fact to me say is like, you heard everything. The jury was like, yeah, he fucking did it. And yep. then you're like, but you know what? He shouldn't go to jail as long as the average bear because he's a good person. It doesn't work that way. That was kind of what I was trying to say.
Very well said.
Yeah, I mean, the letters from Mila Kunis and Ashton Kutcher about how he kept us off drugs. He was such a good influence. It's like, maybe he should spend more time in jail.
Can be true. I had someone, I don't even know if I've spoken about this on the show. I had someone physically assault me, who I have since came to me because of AA and made peace with me. And that's another thing. And there was someone in that situation who protected me, who went to bat for me. And I felt like physically protected me when someone else was physically attacking me. And then when all the Kavanaugh hearings were coming out, a different person I know texted me, woman, and said, I see that you are friends with so-and-so, who protected me. This person sexually assaulted me. And I said, I believe you. I fully believe that happened. This is the situation that they helped me in. What would you like me to do? Like, I'll unfollow them and I'll never be their friend again. And it's like, those two people are complicated. They have layers. So someone can protect one person and be a predator for another person. That is possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like, BTK, serial killer, had a daughter and a wife.
Yeah.
He did not kill or hurt his daughter and wife.
But I think that's, like, what is true about so many criminals. And I think what we're realizing, there's not, like, there are some people who are just bad news. But there are some people who are just, oh, they went and they're so philanthropic and they did all this stuff and then they invented OxyContin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes though people view karma as like a bank account balance that they're allowed to spend at will. Like, I did all this good stuff. Now I deserve this. Like, it's the same mentality, I deserve to be bad. Like, it's the same mentality of like, I don't know, you treat a woman really nicely for a long time, sex needs to come out from her eventually. Yeah. Like, I was nice to you, I helped you move, now you owe, like, I paid into this.
Or they do the good stuff out of guilt for the bad stuff they've done.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. In one way or another, they believe that it's a balance that they can, like, somehow achieve, make up for, or earn the right to be bad. I think another thing that struck me on this is I had a friend who I'm not in contact with them anymore, but there were accusations against him. Mm-hmm. And like when it happened, I completely froze up. But here's what I didn't do. I didn't speak out publicly about what a good guy he was. I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't think that's relevant to whether or not he did what he did. Like that doesn't seem like something he would do, but that's not like relevant.
That's not for you to decide.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I ended up just kind of in this really awkward place. And I don't even know if I did the right thing. Like I said, I kind of froze and was like, I don't know what to do. And I didn't like stop being his friend, but I kind of slowly did the fade away.
I did that exact, I was going to say this exact story. I had drinks with a friend in New York kind of recently, and she told me about someone I knew in high school. who was a really good friend of mine in high school and so supportive of me. Just like, you know, there's somebody, you know, there's just like that one in 50 people that really gets your sense of humor and just, you know, kind of helps you be you. Mm-hmm. And he's that guy. Yeah. And she told me that she has a friend that said that he assaulted her in high school. And, you know, he's somebody who would comment on stuff on Instagram and we banter and the DMs, whatever. And then the line just kind of went dead for me. But I don't know, because we're not friends now. I don't know how to confront him and go, hey, did you happen to rape this person? Mm-hmm. But I was also like, the line's dead. Like, the line's gone cold. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. There's no template for that.
Like, oh, God, no.
Right. Yeah. But here's what you don't do. You don't write a letter.
No.
And honestly, I don't know if anyone else read the judge's ruling when the sentencing came down. I read it last night. And I honestly think these letters hurt him. I really do. Like, in the long run, I think the judge was like, I don't care about that 70s show. Like, yeah, I don't know what you're – because in it – and I don't know if the – judge or a man or a woman, I believe it's a woman, but they're like, they like the first thing they say is, you are not the victim here. Like, they are spelling out for a person who is just found guilty of multiple counts of rape, no, the system has not failed you. Mm-hmm. You are not the victim. You did this, and everything that's going to come after is a result of your poor decisions. And I was like, wow, I wonder how often a judge has to tell a criminal that they're not the victim.
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I also think that he was not only not the victim, he was the beneficiary of an entire massive system that was designed to protect him from consequence. Alyssa, you're nodding. I mean, I know this is sort of like talking about Scientology is sort of like sticking your dick in a hornet's nest. But on that note, what do you make of like the way that his religious organization allegedly protected him?
I mean, look, I worked for Lifetime when they were helping Leah Remini tell her story of Scientology and escaping it. Look, you know where he lost? I mean, look, Danny Masterson never had my support. No. The thing, Aaron, that got me was the TikTok you sent me about the woman who went down the rabbit hole who was like parsing the letters of support line by line, and mm-hmm. someone lifted out the that he had started a fundraiser for victims of 9/11. Mm-hmm. And that instead of giving them money, he opened a clinic to help them where they would tell the first responders, oh, go here, here's a clinic. They'll help you for all of your like 9/11 related trauma and sickness. And it was like a Scientology recruitment center.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yep.
The fuck? Fuck. You, like, that is, look, everything that we know about Scientology, I'm sure led him to believe it would be fine. He would be fine. They would take care of it. But yuck, just yuck. I saw that, and you know me, I go to bed early, and it was like near bedtime, and I got all whooped up about that one. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's it. That's the line in this. You know, there are a lot of lines in the sand with what he did, but like, if you're going to talk about someone's good deeds and they can be unraveled that quickly by someone on TikTok, your good deeds aren't that good. Mm-hmm.
It's also interesting that in their apology, they said, we only did this because his parents asked us to.
Yeah. Like,
I actually think that's fine. I actually think that's the most, like, reasonable answer to be like, he sucks, but, like, his mom was really upset. Like, because I do think there's a world where you can get very backed in the corner by someone's family who is
innocent and you love them.
And here's the thing, too, is I truly don't want to get too in the weeds on any situation, but sometimes things come out about people and there's obviously a range. And I always use like Harvey Weinstein as the top and like Louis C.K. somewhere down, you know, like there really is a range of bad things. And certain things come out about certain people and they're on like the, what would be quote unquote, the lower end of the spectrum. And my initial reaction now, having lost certain people, is I don't want them to commit suicide. Mm-hmm. I don't want anyone that loves them to harm themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a genuine fear of
someone losing, and all of that is a result of his poor decisions. Like, that doesn't take any of that away. I don't think there's any benefit in being like, your mom is bad, or you're, you know, like, I don't know what good that does, but that is a true fear I have of people that I have cared about who have found themselves in in not similar situations, but, you know, on the scale.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. I think Danny Masterson in this situation, I guess if I were Mila Kunis and his mom called me, it would be hard for me to say no.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if I were Danny Masterson's mom, I would not have the audacity to ask people who are working actors or who are like semi-working actors or high-profile public people.
An anti-sex trafficking organization.
That is a big ask. Mm-hmm. That's a Hail Mary. And I think that's a little bit audacious.
But he had 30 letters. I mean, it was like a high number.
Moms love calling people.
His mom needs to do some fundraising for Katie Porter.
Yeah, seriously. Maybe she can undo. It seems very, like, of course a mom is going to do that. But I don't know. I think maybe she was, like, out of pocket for asking his friends and stuff.
Again, this could also just be set life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like she was the den mother, and so it's almost like their mother.
But
and
I don't know.
I don't know, but
no,
I can guess. Yeah.
I was going to say, it also goes to your earlier point that is, look, she is devastated. His mother is facing her own kind of trauma. She's spiraling, right? She's sending out emails. She's making phone calls. She's like, please, please, please. Mm-hmm. And nobody can back away from this desperate woman, or I assume she's desperate, to go and make these things. However, again, it goes back to the response to getting called out for the letter, right? Like Mila and Ashton, anyone who didn't think, look, if one of you three, if your ma's asked me to write a letter, I would do so knowing, again, I would probably prefer to testify as a character witness in your trial as opposed to write the letter.
Mom, listen up.
Listen, lady, here's what I'll give you. But I think that, like, you have to know there's going to be blowback and you should be prepared for it and what you're going to say. And again, their response to getting called out was, like, equally as bad as their letters.
Mila seemed mad. Like, it almost,
she
seems
like, despondent. Like,
how dare you? It's funny, in Iggy Azalea's response, she says outright, I didn't think any of you were going to see this. Like, I thought this was, like, between a judge and me, and now it's on Reddit. Like, I didn't know that. And I'm like, I wonder, like, did Mila and Ashton know? And they just said, we're willing to, because this is definitely, like, legacy ruining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it really is. I mean, like, Streisand effect, we talk about that a lot, but it seems to happen more and more, and people just seem completely unaware that it's a thing, which is ironic considering what the Streisand effect is. Like, by writing this letter and then by making that weird, I follow this like PR expert on TikTok who's one of my favorite followers. I forget her name, but we'll drop her in the show notes. And she was like, that's not an apology video, it's an explanation video.
Yeah.
Right.
And like
exactly.
And they weren't that, like, they use the word if. You can't use an if in an apology. That's like a conditional. You just can't do it.
He's found guilty.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have to do any of the, like, I don't want to get into semantics. It's like, he's guilty.
Just post the verbiage. Like, you don't have to read it and act like you're looking at a camera.
Oh, my God.
It was like just a hostage video.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just like, say, here's our statement and send that out and let people, like—
That's the other thing.
You didn't do yourself any favors either by looking so put out by this. You know?
That's the thing, is that their video made them also seem like victims.
Yes.
Like, they looked teary-eyed. They looked sullen. And it's like, no, guys, in this whole soup of misery, there's only a few victims here and none of them are you.
Yes. You are the person in the situation to whom the least bad thing happened.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Everybody else is literally having worse things happen to them.
And on that note, this is what really gets me right in my gut, is that they were penning this letter knowing that these victims, one of the victims was disowned by her entire family because she was pressing charges. lost her family. Her mother said, you know, yeah, I do hope he goes to jail, but but not at the expense of the church, you know. So I'm going to put church before my own daughter's rape case. And when you just think about these brave women and what they had to pull themselves through to go through this, to come up against the Church of Scientology.
Yep.
That alone is just like, if you're not totally all in behind these women, then I really don't know where your head is. And it makes me think, if I'm going to put on my most compassionate hat, it makes me think that these kids were real, that this guy really did their head in too, mm-hmm. when they were all working together, and they really need to, you know, have some inner child work yeah. done and really look at who they were at that time versus who they are now and understand that they were being snow-jobbed as well. So, mm-hmm. so I mean, I think if I were their publicist, I'd be like, go discover that maybe in some way you are a victim too because you were gaslit by this guy and make amends for that. Mm-hmm.
I gotta say though, if Masterson is as good at convincing people he's a leader as all of his like character letters say, mm-hmm. and you know he rose to prominence in the Church of Scientology, you know maybe he's gonna come out of jail with a bunch of new recruits for Scientology. Maybe he's just gonna convert the whole jail. They're all gonna get their what is it, getting your e-meter read or whatever?
I don't
become
know.
An admiral. What's it called?
Auditing. Auditing. They're all gonna...
Isn't everything like boat captains?
Yeah, they're all like boat captain words. Auditing is a weird word to use for an organization that doesn't pay taxes.
That doesn't pay taxes.
Okay, yeah, there's a long fight for that to happen for them. Okay, now that I'm on their shit list, RIP me, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sanity Corner / I Feel Petty. And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that requires context. So don't you dare clip a couple seconds of what we said this episode. You need to listen to the whole thing. The whole thing. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. It is moot. It's moot. This is legally binding language. We've got a few announcements for the class before we get to Sanity Corner / I Feel Petty.
Fall is always a good time to refresh your wardrobe. And this year, we're asking ourselves, what would the Barbie costume team do? The Crooked Store took the Barbie aesthetic and ran with it directly to an abortion rights rally. With the Bodily Autonomy line, you can push back against abortion restrictions in candy-colored tees in cropped and regular cuts. If you're a Barbie, just spin around and you'll be wearing it. If you're a human, head to crooked.com/store to shop.
Okay, let's get to it. Megan, kick us off.
Okay, I have a couple of documentary recommendations. Caroline was like, Megan watches documentaries. Yes, I read too.
Megan's polishing a monocle right now.
Yes, absolutely. I'm an intellect without a bra on. Okay, so they're both on HBO. So this is going to seem like I'm doing promo for HBO, but I stand with the WGA intellect. The first one is called BS High. I've seen a lot of discourse online about it. An absolute must watch. It is about a school that did not exist that wound up playing on ESPN. Like, you do not have to be in the sports. It's really fascinating. And it also, I think, talks about just the exploitation of young Black men within the athletic system in our country. The other one is Telemarketers, also on HBO. So good. Also Scammers. Like, it's just so, like, scammers. It starts like 20 years ago. And where it winds up is so, like, fulfilling and so happy. And you take such a journey with these people that are truly unlikely heroes. And while you're on HBO, if you're not watching Righteous Gemstones, it's the funniest show on TV. It does not get nominated. It's absolute blasphemy. It should be nominated for every single award. So funny. So if you need, like, a palate cleanser after you just watch hours of scamming, Righteous Gemstones.
Shout out to Edie Patterson.
Yes,
she's
my
buddy.
So good.
She is fantastic.
Every single award.
I know.
Give her all the awards.
Tim Baltz, like, they all deserve EGOTs.
Yeah. It's so good. The thing, this is like whatever, nerdy, but the plot and the storytelling in Righteous Gemstones is so tight. It is like, as someone who's like tried to write for TV, it's so hard to like make a plot work the way it's supposed to.
Are we being scabs by extolling how great this show is?
I don't know. We didn't work on it.
I think as an actor, we get to like say we like other actors.
Yeah. That's good.
Yes.
Okay. I benefit zero from telling, unless I become friends with Edie, which I would love.
You would love.
Yeah.
You should have her on.
It's such a good show. And like the pilot, if you're like suspicious, watch the pilot. The pilot is one of the best pilots I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. It is so, so good. Oh, my gosh. And I also watched Telemarketers with Josh. It's so good. I thought it was fake. I had to, like, Google it. I'm like, did this really happen? And it did.
Everyone in it reminds me so much of just, like, a scummy stand-up comedian. Like, it's got very much, like, open mic vibes. And so I was being taken back. But, yeah, there's like a drug arc that ends up being like there's a man in it who I'm like, he is dead. Like, we don't see him for years. I'm like, I know he's dead. And then he's like, not dead at all. He's back and better than ever.
Spoiler.
Sorry.
Well, there's a bunch of guys.
Everybody's on drugs.
There's a bunch of guys who could be dead in show. Yeah. For sure. Okay, Alyssa, Sanity Corner or I Feel Petty?
Aaron, I feel petty this week. And I feel actually I'm mad. Okay. A couple weeks ago, Aaron,
I did a whole
Sanny about how I had discovered TikTok and I loved it. I was so into TikTok. I was getting everything to my heart's desire on TikTok. Well, here's the problem. I'm here with some complaints. You guys, I have complaints. Because why am I now getting a continuous loop of MAGA mom videos? And how many videos are there of John Cicada out there? Because I'm getting them all. I mean, like, where is my fantasia of Stevie Nicks and, like, vintage gymnastics routines and, like, Paul Rudd doing Freddie Mercury on Lip Sync Battle? Like, where is all that? Why did I open up TikTok last night to Kurt Cameron? It is so wrong. I only like the right things. I have never watched anything MAGA adjacent on TikTok, and now I get it, and I can't hide from it. So now I'm done on TikTok. That's it. It was a short-lived romance, but I can't. I mean, because the worst is the MAGA moms start off slow.
Yeah, what are they saying?
You're like, what are you talking about? Oh, girl, it is anti-vax, anti-teacher, anti-everything. And it is, but like, I'm curious. People start talking about their kids. I'm like, let me see. I'm a child-free, curious woman. And I'm like, let's see what they have to say. And all of a sudden, it gets real wild, real fast.
It gets dark real fast.
Wow.
And anyway, I'm so sad because I really enjoyed my time on TikTok. But
you just have to watch like a slew of cat videos, don't you? Isn't that how that works?
Look, there's a lot of good cat stuff on TikTok.
But I'm saying, doesn't it algorithm you?
That's the problem. I don't know who got dirty with my algorithm. My algorithm should be nothing but cat videos, cooking videos, and Stevie Nicks. That's all it should be.
That's all it should be.
It's not.
Maybe you could just spend a few hours doing some really targeted searches and like bringing those up
or turn your cookies on.
Yeah, turn your cookies
on. You know what? Maybe that's my problem, but like I just felt like I had to come here and say it because I'm going to be honest. When I said how much I love TikTok a couple weeks ago, people were like, "Oh my god, it's so corroded." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And then I was like, "Oh, this is what you're talking
well,
about."
Well, before they Twitter went to in. Went to X, which I have not done the changeover. I have not downloaded that X, whatever.
Don't
but
do it. It's
I'm not doing
spyware.
It. It's viral, but I mean, it's vile. But the Twitter kept only pushing Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah.
So when I got an ounce of cell service at Burning Man, the only thing I got for news was Marjorie Taylor Greene said that 80,000. It was a deep state. A ploy to bring 80,000 people to the desert and indoctrinate them on climate change. That was, wow. That's the only little piece of news that I could eke through a tiny cell tower.
Is she an op? Is she like an op? Like, it just, it's so on the note. Like, it seems like she was written, you know? Like, she's,
yeah.
I saw recently that a lot of people are painting their roofs blue because they think the Jewish space lasers can't get them if they have blue roofs.
Oh, my God. It's a way to, like, what? Have them have Israeli flags on them.
Exactly.
Seriously. I don't, I mean, blue roof, I don't know what it, I mean, guess your house looks like a swimming pool now? Like, I don't know.
Oh, dear God.
It's so, like, you want to waste some time and energy and money, go for it. That's just, ugh, what a, that's, that sucks, Alyssa. I'll start sending you more cat videos. I sent you the video of the cat
also,
eating corn.
Also, here's the thing. Just learned last night you'd been sending me videos. I didn't know there was an inbox on TikTok.
Yeah, no, that's confusing.
Yeah,
I don't, like, know all the.
I was like, is Alyssa mad at me? She's not responding to any of my
curated
TikToks.
Never. I had no idea it existed.
Okay, I'm going to go. I've got a sanity corner, and it is in the vein of Megan's. It's about scammers, and it is so good. So good. It's a podcast. I think it's been out for like year or two already. It's called Love Janessa.
Okay.
It is about the world of online romance scams.
Ooh.
So there's a
Mikayla and I are like, we're in.
So first of all, the narrator of the whole podcast has a incredible voice. Her name is Hannah Ajala, and she is a BBC presenter.
I love that.
Perfect.
Name.
And she is British African. And so she's like, she goes to Africa and then it goes to the US. And it's like the story of this one woman's picture who is used in tons of catfishing romance scams. And there's like a whole industry. So every episode, like, you go deeper into it because she's like, who is this person who she finds out is named Janessa Brazil? And every episode she goes deeper trying to find the real Janessa. And, like, it's so good. It is so good.
Have you finished it?
I finished it in 2 days.
Wow. So it's still good? It's good.
Yes.
Okay.
Erin, I just have to tell you, if you catch up, if you get to this season's 90-day fiancé the other way, this is a storyline.
Well,
they find the woman who catfished him.
I mean, I feel like every season of 90 Day, this is a storyline.
No, but they find there's the catfish person who used the picture, and they found the woman in the picture to be like, did you know your picture was being used to catfish? And they, like, have her on the show.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's really, oh, God, it's so fascinating. It's, like, it's super easy to listen to. The episodes are, like, 35, 40 minutes long. You'll, like, get hooked after one or two episodes.
I'm in.
I know I'm getting old because I hear all these scams and I'm like, it'd be easier to just get a job, you know? Like, you gotta spend so much time calling and going, we've been doing some work in your neighborhood. It's like, no, you haven't. Go work in a library.
Yeah, it's crazy. I don't even want to give learning about all the different things that Hannah Ajala found was just like so, what? Like, it was so, I had to like keep taking my headphones off and interrupting my husband and being like, and they're doing this.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah, it's really, really good. So I don't even think I'm overselling it. It's one of my favorite things I've listened to in a while. Since I listened to that episode, Finn and the Bell, have you heard that one?
No.
Oh, devastating. One of the best podcast episode I've ever listened to, ever. It is devastating.
Oh, I don't know if I can have devastating right now.
Yeah, it's pretty Love Janessa, a romp.
Okay.
It is very fun. There's like darkness and devastation in it, but overall just.
And they don't bone the landing, which is good. It
yes,
sounds like it's
yes.
good through and through.
Okay. Yep. There's at the end. I
bone the landing. Put it on the board.
another expression that.
Okay, Mikayla, that leaves you.
Me. Okay. Normally, I would just really relish a petty, but I think I'm going to go with a sanny because I did find my true passion during this writers and actors strike, which is I have a neighbor who's a ceramicist, and he has been teaching me how to throw pots. Guys, it is the most wonderful, wonderful, wonderful way to spend. Alyssa, the fact that you don't is weird to me.
Mikayla, like okay, listen, you know me. I start something, I go down the rabbit hole. But I spent a lot of time on your Instagram, and your work is gorgeous.
Thank you. It is gorgeous. Thank you so much. Thank you. And that's being a newbie. And that's what I mean is, like, you're way more craftier than I am.
Will you send me one? Will you send me one?
Send you what?
One of your
ceramic
pieces of work.
Pot?
Yes.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yes.
But
yay.
But more importantly, I think you specifically need to do it. And anybody
writing
who
it down
has any level of anxiety or world fatigue just I don't know where I muster the energy, but I have ADHD. Like very badly. And I will sit down and I will work for 6 hours and it will feel like 10 minutes. Nobody has that kind of time. So this is the only window where I'm doing it. But, and it'll be like gardening and knitting and everything else I've started that is just going to be, just piles of shit all around my house. but for the moment, it is having your hands in clay. Getting just dirty like a kid in a sandbox, and then just making stuff to the degree that I watch on TikTok so many pottery videos. I watch the British Throwdown now, and the thing about pottery is it hasn't changed for 2,000 years. So if you learn in 2 days, you know all the vernacular and you understand all the other things. The only thing you don't have is experience and skill. So that's something that you just hone over time, I guess, supposedly. But what you do have is an understanding of it. It's not like you have to completely learn how to put together a car, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
So it is, and especially like then learn the new cars, the hybrids, nothing has changed. They all go into a, the wheels haven't changed, the kilns haven't changed. It's so fantastic.
When you are like out and about in the world and you happen to pass a piece of ceramics, do you now like notice and you're like, that's hard?
I saw an incense burner. Yes. I saw an incense burner when I was traveling in Banff recently, and it was $65 and I would have bought it. And then I looked at it and I was like, I can make 20 of those tomorrow when I go back.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was like, that's amazing. It's really... those kind of things really prey on the fact that we don't think we can do it, and we can. It's very. Huh.
I want to get into blown glass.
Okay.
Oh, that looks fun. That feels dangerous.
I know. It's like ceramics extreme. Because the studios in LA, they're filled up. You know, like you can't find a kiln west of the Mississippi right now.
You know, it's funny. One of my dear like mom friends, we met through our doula. So what's more LA than that? She has just gotten into throwing pots, and she goes to like, I bet you guys go to the same studio.
Oh, no, there's a lot.
This is at someone's house
it's
in Ojai. Yeah. It's in their, in their garage. And
I want to do.
It's in their garage. You need two things. You need a wheel and you need a kiln. Yeah.
Wow. That sounds fun.
And a garage in Ojai.
The next time you go to a museum and you're like looking at the pottery, you're going to be like, holy shit, these people.
I mean, that's the thing. It's you start to, separate the wheat from the chaff. Am I still
throw it on
going?
The board.
Yeah.
Throw it on the board.
And you just know which ones are like, somebody made that. This vase is somebody made a mistake. Right? And this vase is somebody intentionally did.
Wow.
That.
Yeah. Whoa. That's so cool. Okay. Well, now I'm into pot. Michaela's into pot.
I'm into pot, but not your mom's pot. Maybe your mom's pot.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. Does anybody have anything going on they want to bring up we didn't get to talk about?
You're very nice to ask that because I am heading over to Santa Fe to support the governor there, who she has, Governor Grisham, she has single-handedly declared gun violence an emergency and has, for 30 days, putting a halt on conceal and carry in Albuquerque and most of Albuquerque, I should say. Based on the fact that it is the number one killer of children and teens. And so she's the only governor who's really actually doing something. And this is a bit of a litmus test. Of course the NRA is suing her. Of course, the death threats are on high. Of course everybody is losing their shit over it. But if we as Democrats can't completely support her vocally, mm-hmm. which they seem to not be doing— weirdly, everybody is is very silent on this. And because I think everybody's so afraid, and it's all we talk about. You know, like David Hogg is always like, vote them out and everything. It's like, if we don't support her, this is how they don't get asked back or voted back in.
Yeah.
So I'm just putting out the call that we all need to get behind this governor, because she is not out of the Constitution. She is protecting the rights of children to live as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, but I would way, way rather a governor put a halt on guns until we could figure out, you know, how we're going to take care of guns and let children live than worrying about what freaking book they're going to check out of a library. I mean,
yeah, let's just try some stuff too. Like let's start doing things.
Aren't killing these kids.
I mean, how many kids have died from having someone come into their school and throw a copy of Genderqueer at them?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, if they shot it out of a t-shirt cannon, but not one person has.
Never heard of that happening. New Mexico continuing to be one of America's best states.
Yeah.
It's one of America's best. One of the top 50 for sure.
It really is terrific.
Probably because it has another country's name in it.
And she is the only governor to, you know, step up and do this. And I think it, you know, she's creating the conversation of what even is the Second Amendment, and do we need another amendment to test it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I'm gonna go and support her, and I hope everybody else takes to social media and outpours support for her as well.
Well, that is awesome.
I'm going with Here for the Kids, by the way, which is trying to, you know, get rid of guns and fossil fuels. No big deal. just small little things.
Oh, thank you. On behalf of the kids.
Yes, truly.
Thank you. Thanks to everybody for joining us this week. We have a listener shout out before we go. I wanted to read a nice email that we got from a listener last month. Dear Aaron, Alyssa, and everyone else on the Hysteria team, my name is Grace, and I'm emailing to say thank you. I started listening to your show after graduating with a chemistry BS and moving from MA to San Diego in 2019. My listenership was in an effort to learn about politics and keep up with current events. However, Hysteria has broadened my interest and understanding of the many other complexities discussed by you and your guests. Your work has played a role in enabling me to be a better advocate for myself, sustain meaningful, particularly female friendships with peers, and help me find quality mentors. Oh my gosh.
Wow. That's amazing. I can't do any of those things.
Yeah. Well, I guess we...
I gotta listen to this show.
By speaking openly and honestly, engaging with challenging topics, and always lifting each other up, Hysteria never fails to remind me not to settle for anything less in my own life. Thank you so much, Hysteria team. Keep up their wonderful work. Grace, thank you.
Grace. Yeah,
that's amazing. So nice.
Grace.
Thank
Topher
you.
Topher Grace, and now this Grace.
Good Grace.
Good Grace. Good Graces.
Good Graces. Michaela and Megan, thank you so much for joining this week. Alyssa Master Monaco, my ride or die now and always. And listeners, thanks to you. There will be more Hysteria next week. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Aaron Ryan. And Alyssa Master Monaco is our co-producer. Fiona Pestana is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Megan Patzel. And thank you to Julia Beach, Ewa Okulate, Amelia Montooth, Adia Hill, and David Tolles for production support every week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on Instagram and Twitter for more original content, host takeovers, and other community events.
Are you looking for some good, clean positivity? Good. Me neither. Maddie Murphy, the host of The Bad Broadcast, serves a weekly comedy podcast dedicated to talking about everything we love to hate. She searched her whole life to find her passion. Little did she know she had been practicing her true talent every single day, complaining. Join Maddie every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts, and be sure to follow her on Instagram at The Bad Broadcast to answer her weekly questions and for a chance to be featured on her pod. See you there.